Welcome to the Randin Podcast with Raffi and Chandra.
Welcome to the Raffi and Chandra Podcast. This time from a TV box and a video box.
Yeah.
Special edition via Zoom today.
What do you mean? This is going to be what the future episodes are going to be like. This is actually like the proper episode of Randin, really.
True. This is true. It's all about a global work, you know, work from home as opposed to work from friend's couch. So,
oh, yes, it makes podcasting easier though.
This is true. Well, today's mini-sode is going to be something a little different. We're going to try to do an Eli 5. So basically, which is called Explain It Like It's 5. So
we're going to do five, like I'm 5 in 5 minutes as well, just to put a timer on it.
Not to take too long, but we're going to take a concept or a topic and try to explain it like you're 5 years old. So the first thing we've got here is about short selling. So I'm going to do that one. And you guys might have come across on the news recently how...
Hang on. Let me put on a timer.
Well, I've got a timer here. We're good to go.
Oh, okay.
There's a clock. It's a computer.
you can't see it. So here, it's a 5 minute timer. It's on. Go.
All right. The timer is running out. So you might have seen recently there was some action with GameStop and how there was a whole bunch of people who were trying to, you know, fight people who are short selling stocks. And you might have been wondering what that is all about. So I'm going to explain what short selling is, so then I can explain a little bit more about that. So the whole concept of short selling is, let's just say you have some stocks and you think the price is going to go down and you want to try to make some money because you think, oh, that stock's going to be less valuable. Normally, you buy a stock and then you sell it later, and so then you make a profit. Now, to imagine how short selling works, let's just say that we're talking about Pokemon cards instead. Now,
okay.
Raffi has some very extensive Pokemon card collection. It's got some very expensive Pokemon cards too. Now, I know that they're about to release a whole bunch more Pokemon cards, which are going to make a specific one worth a lot less than what it's worth today.
All right, so let's say they're worth $100 now.
Exactly. So I go to Raffi and I say, hey, Raffi, can I have your super duper awesome special edition Pokemon card? Can I borrow it from you? I'll buy you dinner as a thank you. I'll pay for, you know, your dinner. I'm just going to hang on to it for a month and I'll give it back to you at the end of the month. You know, we're good mates. You trust me. And so you're like,
I don't know. They're Pokemon cards.
No. Well, this is true. Friendships can break down over Pokemon cards. And so Raffi lends me the Pokemon card. And I owe Raffi one Pokemon card. So in the meantime, I've got another friend, Carlos, who actually wanted to buy that Pokemon card. So I go and sell that Pokemon card to Carlos.
You bastard.
I know. So I get the $100 off Carlos and I've got an IOU to Raffi for one Pokemon card. But I'm betting that the price is going to go down. So I wait for another, you know, 3 weeks. And now everything happens that I predicted. The new edition's out. Everyone's bored of the old stuff. No one cares about Raffi's special edition one anymore. And so I find another friend or somebody else who's got that same card. And I'm like, hey, it's now only worth $50. So I'll buy it off you for $50. And now I've got that special edition card back. I give it to Raffi. So Raffi's collection's complete. He's happy. He lent out his Pokemon card. He got a free dinner out of it. And he's got his card at the end of the day. I managed to sell that Pokemon card initially for $100. And I only paid $50 to buy it back. So I've made $50.
Oh, and my friend
Carlos was happy because he wanted the card at the time. He got the card. And the person who wanted to buy a card today or sell the card today also was happy. So everyone's kind of winning-ish.
Wow, like you went with the worst possible analogy, didn't you? It's like the the Pokemon cards, the limited editions don't get reprinted. That's the whole point of the limited edition.
Well, it turns out that there were counterfeit dodgy ones, and I knew that.
Well, no. So the counterfeit dodgy ones are the ones that are the most valuable. The ones with the print errors are the ones that are traded for like tens of thousands. So there's a few out there.
Our trading skills are not up to par.
Yeah, I was just like, oh God, going for the wrong analogies. Like the one thing where the actual faulty ones are the ones that are worth a lot.
Well, it was either that or I was going to go with sardine tins as another option.
Yeah, limited edition sardines.
Well, you know, you've got too many sardines.
You could have gone with toilet paper, man. It's like the sign of the COVID times.
This is true. But the problem with doing this is that, well, if it turns out, you know, this is actually a very limited edition one, I was wrong and the price goes up. Now I owe Raffy one very expensive Pokemon card, which I initially sold for $100, but I might need to buy it back for $200 or maybe even $1,000 because I still owe Raffy that Pokemon card. So when he...
And dinner.
Yeah, and I've already paid for the dinner. So I'm down one dinner, but I'm now going to pay like, you know, $500 to rebuy that Pokemon card and give it back to Raffy since I owe him a Pokemon card. Otherwise, he's going to like come to my house and ransack all my stuff.
Yeah, so far. Well, normally anyway.
But it doesn't work when you don't have any stuff. But anyway. So the
5 minutes.
Yeah, there we go.
But you're going to the I mean, I suppose the negatives are a different kettle.
Exactly. It's good because, you know, you can get rid of I can make some money on something I think is going to lose value. But the big downside is that at best, that thing that I bought for $100, maybe I get it for free so I could make $100. But at worst, if that thing that I bought for $100, I now have to buy for, I could have to buy it for an infinite price. It could be worth $1,000 in a month. It could be worth $100,000 in a month. So theoretically, I could lose unlimited money.
So how does it apply to the GameStop thing that you, like what happened there?
Well, with that one, there was a whole bunch of people who borrowed the GameStop stocks from somebody. From a whole bunch of people, and they were hanging on to it, expecting the price would go down so they could sell it back. But people decided GameStop is actually a really good, solid business, and new management coming.
So, who were trying to short sell? Was it the Wall Street Bets people?
Funds with lots of money was trying to say that this company is going to be worth less and less. And usually, what they do is to put out some extra research to show that they're right and the price is going to go down. So they try to make the price go down a bit as well. Because
isn't that legal?
It's only illegal if you get caught, as with most things. And also the fines are not that big, so they still do it. But a whole bunch of people decided, actually, it's worth a lot. And then it became a bit of a phenomenon. Everyone kept buying it. And so then suddenly they were exposed to a lot more risk than they expected. Which created lots of problems, and that's
but
how.
Can you short sell in Australia?
It's banned in a lot of countries, including Australia. There are certain ways and things to do it, but for most people, it's not that accessible. So it's not really such a thing in Australia. Some other countries as well, like I think Korea, South Korea as well, completely banned. A whole bunch of countries banned it after the GFC kind of thing, to try and stop people from betting on prices going down, which is, you know, thought to be bad for economies.
Well, it's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy, like, right? Like, A, if you stir up
a negative sentiment, something's going to go down. You kind of also want to, you know, give it a kick on the way down to make sure it goes down. So theoretically, yeah. Good, because it means things that are overvalued correct to their correct value. But people are people.
I don't know. I just feel like short-selling is one of, it's kind of like the opposite would be the leveraged stocks, right? All you're doing is exaggerating the peaks and troughs. Like, even just going to revert to the mean, but you've just, but unlike just leveraged shorts, like shorts and whatnot, it's just the timing aspect of it means that you're more likely to fail. And the other part of it is that, yeah, the infinite losses part, because there's no cap on the, well, I mean, I suppose you could always just cancel your short trade, but yeah.
Yes, it's a problem. But yes, that's basically what short selling is.
Random interlude.
Now you know.
Okay, now you gotta. So it's gonna be my turn. I picked a topic as well. Please leave us a little message on the anchor.fm URL about which explanation you liked better. That was Chandra's attempt with Pokemon cards,
which was amazing.
So I picked polyphasic sleep just because I could not think of anything that wasn't finance or med related. Okay, so in terms of polyphasic sleep, it just is used to be a thing that I was really focused on. So, time is on, but it's getting 5 minutes is on. If you think about, we're going to use the chocolate bar analogy. So if you think about your normal sleep, think of it as one chocolate bar, right? You eat it all at once. You go, that's delicious. Yum, done. Then you go out your day, you've got your energy and off you go. Yeah. Then you come back at night, you're tired, you go to sleep, you have your chocolate bar of rest and you rinse and repeat. And that's what most people do, right? Unless you're like in Spain and Mexico, I think siestas are quite a common thing where people have an afternoon nap. So automatically, that's called biphasic sleep. So if it's routinely that you have two, so instead of having one big chocolate bar, now you've got a slightly smaller chocolate bar and a fun size bar, right? So that's what you're doing. It's you're refreshing on your energy. You're getting to about halfway through the day and you're like, look, I could push on through, but I'm a bit tired. I'm going to have a chocolate bar. So you have a bit of a sleep and then you wake up and you go about your day. And that's called biphasic sleep. It's quite common in a lot of cultures. There's some research showing that, you know, humans have a slightly weird circadian rhythm. So it's all dictated by how long your body thinks it needs to sleep. And you'd think like most animals kind of have a 24-hour cycle because day, night and all that stuff. The human cycle is actually slightly off kilter. I can't remember. I think it's slightly longer. I think it's like 26 hours. So it kind of shifts. It's not quite exactly right. It doesn't quite fit with the earth. So hence biphasic occasionally works for better, like depending on which part of the equator you're at and how far you go, et cetera, et cetera. It seems to work better for some people. Now there's, so some people looked at that and went, hang on. So you can have two sleep cycles. Like, you know, you go to sleep again. I wonder how short a sleep can you do? So the entire point of this is if you actually split the sleep cycle from one big chocolate bar into mini bars, in total, you can have yummy chocolate, AKA restfulness, but you need far less sleep than what a full chocolate bar would be worth. So instead of needing full 8 hours, you might be able to get away with about 4-ish hours in total or less, right? And the more chunks you have, it seems like instead of having the peaks and troughs, you just top up regularly throughout the day with a bit of sleep, you might be able to run where in total you've slept for 3.5-4 hours, so you get a lot more time. So in the polyphasic version, there's different protocols, right? And the finer your chocolate bar, the smaller the bits are of sleep, or the less sleep in total in 24 hours that you end up using, the more regimented it has to be. So the Superman protocol, so these are all named by these random people on the internet. So the most extreme version of this is where you can work for about 3 to 3.5 hours, then you have a 20-minute power nap, then you wake up and you can do that, and you can do that indefinitely, right? And in total, if you package all that up, it works out to be about 3 hours sleep. So essentially, instead of having like, you know, your standard 16-hour day where 8 hours sleep plus 16 hours equals you 24, you're going to get far, far more hours in the day. So like, what's that, 21 hours to actually work on something. And this was super duper popular about 10 years ago when people were like, yeah, I'm a tech entrepreneur and I'm going to work 21 hours. There's obviously some downsides to this, mainly being you're going to be out for lunch and go, oh, there's my alarm. I'm going to have a nap now. And it also turns out that if you're on the super strict polyphasic sleep protocols, if you miss one, you're kind of okay. If you miss two, you go from being okay to being full on delirious, probably about to be admitted to a mental asylum. So, and as the blocks start to build up, if you can't get your sleep in, you start to very rapidly go down because your body has basically got no buffer for tiredness. So that's the con of it. I personally experimented with biphasic sleep where I did 4.5 hours asleep during this is during exam time. So I'd sleep from midnight to about 5 a.m., get up, go to work. And then at work, I would have like my half hour lunch break. And off that, I would go to the library, put my head on my hands and lie just head down on a library desk and pass out for 15 minutes, wake up. And I'd feel like I just had a long sleep and keep working. So I did that for 6 months solid, definitely, but overall for between the first and the second exam for a specialty training. So about 2 to 3 years. The bad part of it is if you're a registrar, you occasionally have to carry a pager and it goes off, which means it wakes you up. And that can be quite jarring because by the end of the day, you're starting to get a bit wrecked. Even with biphasic, it can start affecting you. But it's also hard sometimes to take a break in med and have that 10 minutes to have a sleep.
But that's to say, no, it's 1 p.m. I need my nap now.
Yeah, so that's polyphasic sleep as chocolate bar. So overall, instead of a big chocolate bar with a lot of calories, you have lots of tiny little chocolate bars that are fun size that ends up being overall less chocolate and healthier for you. Well, in this case, probably the other way around.
It's less chocolate overall, not the same.
Yeah, less chocolate overall. So yeah, that's polyphasic sleep. I hope that made sense.
Yeah, what made you stop?
Huh?
What made you stop?
Overall, I didn't need extra time. Like, you know, after a while, you can have all the time you want, unless you... So the whole thing of everyone wants more time, but if you have no plan of how to use that time or you haven't structured it. So exams are great because there's only one task you have to do and every waking hour is dedicated to that one thing. You don't ever go, I should binge on Netflix now. Like I put it on, but it's only because my brain's being fried and I felt guilty about it even though I couldn't do anything, but it's just random noise to get me through until I feel productive again sort of a thing, or I've had my next sleep. Whereas in day-to-day stuff, like most people are time-starved, but it's more a lack of priorities. There is no this one critical thing you have to focus your attention on. You think about it, you know, I could be doing 101 other things, but then they're equal priorities. It's not, so unless you're really good at following a structured plan where you go, yes, I'm going to do these 3 hours. I really need these 3 hours to do X, Y, and Z outside what your normal 9-to-5 job is, et cetera. You're just not going to use it. You're just going to use it to binge watch stuff, et cetera. And if you think about it, after a while, that's just meant for relaxation. You don't need to give up sleep over it. And the other part of it is it does make your schedule a bit more rigid. Like if you're doing 4 to 5 hours without that nap, you really start to struggle in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And over time, even if you miss it once or twice, it's okay. But if you miss it for 2 or 3 days in the week, then you basically need a good 10, 12 hours to catch up and reset. But your body will try to go back to a monophasic cycle because you're tired and society kind of functions like that. So it's hard to keep on resetting. And some evidence that overall, if you keep resetting from one to the other, can be bad for you.
Yeah, that would make sense as well. Yeah, I got to say, I find the hardest thing, tried it for briefly, but just getting the nap schedule going and falling asleep in time didn't really work. Sometimes I'd be like, yeah, I'm going to go to sleep, but then I didn't.
Well, the biggest thing I think for me was I remember going out to dinner when I was doing this and there was a allied health person there, some psychologist or don't know what the specialty was. And I was just describing the polyphasic sleep experiment. Mm-hmm. And I was saying, yeah, like my time to REM onset. So basically time from putting my head down to dreaming. So AKA a deepish stage of sleep was sub 2 minutes. And she's like, that's not possible. I'm like, this is my evidence was one of those days, put my head down onto my arms, fell asleep and the pager went off and I had a timer for obviously waking up in 15 minutes time. And I looked up and it was just hitting the 13 minute mark, but I could remember the dream as I was waking up. I was like, I'm waking up from a dream as the beeper goes off.
Yeah.
So I was this was not I wonder what I'm like, you know, you're not half asleep. It was a full on, I'm out on an island getting rescued, like total dream, not I'm in the library kind of half asleep. It was a full dream. like I was running in an island somewhere or something like that, right? And clearly I wasn't running because I was asleep.
Is a good thing because that's, I think, something people struggle with even monophasic sleep is onset time.
Yeah. So the thing is, there is a healthy onset time and too fast is actually a sign of chronic fatigue. Ooh. It would require you to feel chronically fatigued. And that was my argument. It's like, well, I don't
know. Maybe that's what polyphasic sleep is, chronic fatigue.
Yeah.
With better branding.
Well, yeah. So they were like, you really need to see someone, like, yeah, post exams.
Later problems.
Well, I was like, I think it was just like a week or two before exams, and I was kind of, you know, when you get to the point where you're kind of burnt and then you start going, yeah, all right, I'll go out for dinner just because I can't do anything else anyway. I think it was one of those points. So yeah, anyway, I had to get through the last few weeks. Yeah.
Well, I guess that sounds like your explanation of the polyphasic sleep.
Okay. Again. Oh yeah. It's a like, follow and subscribe.
Yeah.
We're very enthusiastic about this.
Click on the TV. I don't know if that'll do anything. Can we make it do something?
I genuinely don't know. I've never tried.
Click on it anyway.
Click on it. I'll try and put a button there if YouTube lets me, but I suppose if you're listening to this as a podcast, you should. You're not going to see a TV.
It's going to happen when you click it.
Well, point more down there because that's where the subscribe button thing is. Yes.
That's true.
Yes. Over here is the thing that'll make it pop up and go subscribe.
That one.
And our name up there, which will say Randint, and I think you can click on that. We're just pointing at the different areas of the screen if you're listening. That makes no sense. But if you're listening to it on a podcast platform, just hit the subscribe button.
Yeah,
and if you look at the text underneath, there'll be a send us a message button from Anchor. Just click that. You can just put in any username and email. It doesn't actually check. Just record us a message and let us know which explanation you liked more.
Look forward to hearing from you.
Okay.
Got one little fun fact before we sign off. So I've never been on a sailing boat before, and I just went on one last week. And one thing I learned is the stoves are on a gimbal. So even though the boat's tilted over at 45
degrees. What's a gimbal?
Well, it means that when the boat is tilted over at 45 degrees, the stove stays perfectly flat. So you can actually make a nice cup of tea while the boat's tilted all the way over.
Yeah, but I don't think most people are going to go, yeah, I know what a gimbal is.
A gimbal basically lets something move around. Oh, this should be another Eli 5.
Yeah, I was just like, why would you pick this up?
It's a magical thing, which means that a flat surface can stay flat.
Think of it as if you had a, you know, those little earth globes that have those weird contraptions that is like a globe. Actually, the easiest one is to think of it as
a... sounds like next episodes of Eli 5. Stay tuned. What about you?
Well, if you have a spinning top, you know, yeah, how it stays level. So just imagine that. It's kind of like a system that leaves it so that it's level.
That's more gyroscope.
It is a gyroscope, but I'm going with a powered gimbal. Remember the old fashioned ones that used to be on Hellos, the gyro gimbals?
Think of it like a really cool selfie stick, but when you move your selfie stick around, you stay on the horizon, stays level.
Yeah, all right, that'll do. You can explain gimbals next time. So random fact that we thought of. I was visiting apartments today, and the one I live in, there's two separate entrances, one for the high rise and one for the low rise. So AKA the cheaper apartments have one entrance and the more expensive apartments have another entrance. And definitely. I went to one of the real estate agents, took me to some really fancy one, and we walked in and it's like, there's a difference in the different apartments. The area where you sit down and wait for people to come pick you up is super grand. It has this water features with spinny tornadoes in the water. I was like, wow. Okay. And on the other side, there's barely a couch. So in Australia, very common. Most of the apartment buildings around here have this system. Turns out in London, it's totally illegal. So they basically went, nah, you can't have discriminatory entrance systems. And most of their buildings, even the high-end ones, actually have public housing integrated, because otherwise you get the segregation and all that. It would be very easy for them to have one entrance for the public housing, one else for the nice. So they stopped that by just making, no, you can either have two entrances for everything. You can't zone it Anyway, so everyone can use both entrances, but they didn't say anything about facility use. So it turns out that the ones that get subsidized rents don't get access to any of the facilities because they started complaining, going, well, you know. So there's still some segregation, but I found it interesting that, yeah, they just can't actually have two separate entrances.
It's interesting they actually thought of that and made it a rule.
Yeah. Yeah. And that it's a big enough problem, and that it's especially in central London, it's nice that they actually have community supported accommodation in all the buildings. It's not like relegated to a corner somewhere that, you know, you'd have to commute for 3 hours to get into town. It's dispersed throughout. Like it's a solution, but I suppose
community to sort of be somewhere near the city.
Yeah. But I suppose the playing the devil's advocate, it's also like, hang on, why is this guy paying $3 million for this swanky apartment and the other guy's paying like $100,000? Or I don't know what the differences are, but let's just assume that it's significant enough.
Well, I guess it's the amenities.
Yeah, yeah. Although that being said, the apartment that the real estate agent took me to today, I was like, the apartment itself, like, not bad. Don't get me wrong. Swanky and everything. The amenities. I could live in the amenities.
Hey, this sounds like a strategy. I like it.
Anyway, that's it for this mini-sode.
All right. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye bye. Oh, hang on. We can do reactions. Does that do anything? Yeah. Woohoo.
Yay.
Confetti.
And people on podcasts will be like, what the fuck?
Yes. Ah, now I'm going to have to edit you swearing again. Hi.
Oh, right. Oops. My bad.